Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The FT.
From the Financial Times, this is Hard Currency. Market gloom over China and oil continues to dominate the FX stratosphere, and that means the dollar has begun 2016 strongly without actually having to do much legwork of its own. So, are we embarking on the next phase of a dollar bull run, or will this bearish market mood engulf the world's biggest currency? Welcome to Hard Currency, the weekly podcast from the Financial Times that takes a tour in and around the big FX issues of the past 7 days. Right now, FX traders are probably taking their cue from two indices, the price of Brent crude and the People's Bank of China's daily fix for the renminbi's permissible trading band. Now, all that may change if we hit a bottom in oil and if Chinese central bank exchange rate policy stabilizes. But those sound like pretty big ifs. As the G10 central banks begin to gather for their latest round of policy meetings and Davos assembles next week, what does China and oil mean for the Fed's rate cycle and for monetary policy across G10? With me to discuss this is Stephen Gallo, European Head of FX Strategy at Bank of Montreal. Stephen, welcome. Just give us a sense of the impact of China and oil across G10 FX.
Sure. Well, the impact of China and oil on G10 is at this stage very well defined. And since the beginning of the year, FX investors who are principally trading G10 currencies are basically now dependent almost entirely on other asset classes like equities, like commodity prices. And so there are some very well-defined relationships in FX as a result of that.
Okay, let's see how, as I was saying at the beginning, how the dollar has been performing. It's been strengthening against emerging market currencies. That was the story very much of 2015. That's obviously continuing, isn't it?
Yes. Correct. So the broad trade weighted dollar has appreciated modestly so far this year. And the main reason for that is because commodity block currencies within the G10 space, within that broad trade weighted basket, a number of EM currencies, including the renminbi, have weakened versus the dollar this year. And some of the volatility in those currencies, in those individual currencies, has been pretty high, but equally slowing down that move higher in the broad value of the dollar has been strength in the euro and strength in the yen.
They've been showing haven.
I like to associate their strength during times of risk off with the flow of capital. The flow of capital tends to be outward during periods of risk on, and during risk off, that capital tends to come home. It returns home, and so those currencies appreciate versus the dollar versus a broad basket of currencies.
Yes. And we're also seeing a lot of risk averse impact on the likes of sterling and the Canadian dollar, for example.
Yes. So you're in both of those cases, you're looking at currencies that have a pretty nasty external position during periods of risk off. Currencies with wide current account deficits or widening current account deficits tend to underperform, even if they're developed market currencies. And then, of course, the Canadian dollar is a direct reflection of the weakness in Asian currencies and the weakness in the price of oil and other resource materials.
I mean, it's a pretty stuck record, this EM currency behavior, isn't it?
Have
you seen any sign of that shifting?
Not yet. We're in a period where central banks outside of the U.S. will probably be easing more this year. But we're also in a period where central banks, I think, collectively know that too much aggressive stimulus, or for example, a reversal of monetary policy normalization in the U.S., could feed bubbles that become bigger messes to clean up further down the road. But equally, they don't want to not provide any stimulus at all, or in the Fed's case, they don't want to tighten rapidly or raise rates rapidly, because that could just make a bad near-term situation a lot worse. So they're towing a very fine line. But I think the main point is that in the short run, central banks are unlikely to want to come aggressively to the rescue of markets. They're likely to want some of these moves to play out and for the mentality of the new normal to basically embed itself in the minds of investors globally.
Does that mean we're really seeing, or we're going to be seeing, central banks sitting on their hands and reverting to the thing that they know they're familiar with, which is further easing?
Sitting on their hands from time to time, but certainly not taking the prospect of stimulus completely off the table. I mean, if China domestically had its own sort of bubble immediately after the global financial crisis, and if expectations of very rapid growth, if not albeit unsustainable growth in China, led to a buildup of bubble-related phenomena outside of China, if that's now unwinding as a result of the fact that Fed QE has ended, basically ended, it's probably a good thing. And that needs to play out. The financial global financial markets, investor sentiment and psychology needs to adjust to the fact that that is now happening. It would be foolhardy, or it would be foolish for central banks to push that aggressively in the opposite direction.
Yes. We talk about hard landing and soft landing in China, and whether this is what we're going through. It feels to some extent that the market adjustment that you talk about, or the new normal, is actually the rest of the world having a hard landing or soft landing experience ahead of China having its own hard landing, soft landing experience. You see, I'm trying to suggest that actually we've rushed quite quickly to the market feeling the probable impact of a hard landing in China and reacting strongly or with a great deal of volatility as a result.
Or possibly what it is it's mainly the case that global investors, it's now sinking in that China is not going to grow as fast as it did immediately following the global financial crisis.
Yes.
Is another way of putting it. And that is bumping up against, you know, lower levels of trend growth in the developed world.
Yes.
Right?
From the perspective of the PBOC and looking at China, what do you make of some of the interventionist behavior of this year? FX traders last year were trying to read the mind of central banks like the Fed. They now seem to be trying to read the minds of the PBOC. What can you guide them in terms of how they should be thinking about PBOC behavior and what they're trying to achieve, but particularly on the renminbi and where they want the renminbi to go?
Well, China is less transparent than other major central banks, but China is also experimenting with many different policy levers. China wants a more sustainable growth rate, and China wants a higher quality of growth and structural change. And in order to get that, it's going to be pulling many different policy levers. So that basically, it effectively makes China's financial system and the real economy an experiment. And China doesn't know where it's exactly going to end up. And so therefore, global investors don't know exactly where it's going to end up. And then related to the point I made earlier about the fine line that many central banks are towing, you can see already that China is not in a rush to continuously provide new palliatives to both its economy and to global investors. And that is because it's looking for a more sustainable, normal rate of trend growth and looking for a new normal for its economy. So it's rough. It's a rough environment, especially when one of the phenomena that we currently face is there's a huge demand for financial assets. Yes. From global investors, and there's a shortage of financial assets.
So we see potential M&A deals where people rushing to support those things because they can see the certainty of that.
Sure.
Whereas
sure.
Assets like FX look incredibly uncertain. Is that right?
Yes, FX. Many different asset classes look uncertain because, as I mentioned, you have this demand and this shortage of financial assets, which tends to bid up the price of financial assets. And then when you get a string of bad news, like weak data from a major economy, or a central bank disappoints investors in terms of the amount of stimulus that it provides, or geopolitical risks, or a fall in commodity prices, those assets react negatively, and the unwind of positioning in those assets is significant. This is not going to change anytime soon, and so therefore, global investors are getting used to, I think, the size of the moves that we're seeing in some of the asset classes and the volatility that we're seeing.
We've had barely 2 weeks of this trading year, And we, you know, people like me are already trying to draw conclusions. Do you feel a notable change in FX behavior, FX attitudes? Do you feel that there is, maybe it's nothing more simple than saying that we are just in risk averse territory right now and it's going to take a while to get out?
I think 2015 was more the year where there was a significant change in attitude. And I think really what we're seeing in 2016 is just a carryover. 2015 was a very difficult year for many FX investors in terms of profitability. One of the reasons why I think volatility, although not extreme, is still, you know, it's comfortably within range, within striking distance of its 5-year average, sometimes above. One of the reasons that's the case is because there's not as much capital committed as there once used to be, because it's been a difficult environment. So there's just less money for people to put to work, or less certainty behind people to put that money to work. So I think there was a significant change in attitudes in 2015, and there's been carryover into 2016. But what it means is that when some type of trend develops in FX, people will jump onto that trend very aggressively,
right,
and they won't let up quickly.
But it's normally a negative trend, isn't it? They're not going to jump on as aggressively for a positive trend, are they?
I would say both.
Really?
I would say both. Okay. At the moment, it's the negative one, but the positive trend, when it develops, you know, that
we'll see that come out. Let me just conclude this discussion, Stephen, by coming back to the Fed and the dollar. For a lot of last year, the FX community was spending a lot of time working out whether the Fed was responding to market shifts in behavior or whether it was trying to ignore it. Now that we are at the other side of liftoff, now we are seeing this rate cycle, do you think the Fed is going to be more or less attuned to these kind of market shifts, the very market shifts that held back liftoff in September?
The Fed is, I don't necessarily think there's more or less. I think the Fed does watch financial market conditions very closely. The issue, though, is that if the Fed starts to cement expectations for another rate hike, it should not use the tightening in financial conditions that cementing causes as an excuse to not tighten. What that does is it creates communication issues,
right,
credibility issues even. I mean, maybe credibility is a little bit of a stretch. The Fed has credibility, but communication issues definitely, because it confuses markets. If you're certain that a rate hike is desired, you shouldn't use the tightening in financial conditions or some of the volatility in asset prices as then an excuse to not deliver the ultimate tightening or rate hike that you promised. But going forward, for the dollar, for the Fed, certainly the recent moves in financial markets, I think it's pretty evident that 3 to 4 rate hikes this year from the Fed is looking less likely.
Yeah.
Our view on the broad value of the dollar is that this is really the end of the uptrend. This is the end of this part of the positive cycle for the dollar. And largely what will, once the Fed delivers one, probably two more rate hikes, the markets will be thinking about the upcoming general election in the U.S.,
oh, yes,
which promises to be very messy. And so therefore, the dollar should, we expect the dollar to peak within the next 3 to 6 months.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
That was Stephen Gallo of Bank of Montreal. Keep in touch with all the FX news in the Financial Times on ft.com/markets. And join us again next week for Hard Currency. China, oil. It's a safe bet that these topics will continue to dominate our conversation. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you might like our new show, FT Investigations, exposés and in-depth analysis by our worldwide network of reporters. The show's broadcast whenever we have a new groundbreaking investigation. You can download it at ft.com/.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Podcasts.